RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Dr. Greg Simons is a former associate professor at the Institute for Russian and Eurasian Studies at Uppsala University, where he taught at the Department of Peace and Conflict Research, namely the course on mass media. He's now an associate professor at Tariba University, and we thought we'd get Greg back on to talk about the UK riots, escalation in the Middle East, and New Zealand's presence at NATO meeting. So let's welcome Greg in now. Greg, great to have you back on RCR.
Yeah, cheers, Paul. Good to be back.
We live in interesting times, Greg.
That cannot be denied.
Where do we start? Should we start with the UK riots? Are they riots? Has it gone to riots level?
It is, I suppose, increasing civil discontent from both sides. And, of course, I mean, these riots, which certainly some of them are, have an origin which goes back further. I mean, one can always go back to the rather contentious politician, Enoch Powell, and what he said would happen in the future, and which is happening now. But, of course, that's not in a vacuum, because if you go and regime change and attack other countries, they're not, people from those countries are not going to want to live there. They want to go somewhere else. So, I mean, you destroy Iraq as a safe place. You destroy Libya as a safe place, Syria. They're going to go somewhere else. And that somewhere else is, generally speaking, those countries which are doing the regime change. And, of course, has a flow-on effect, because it doesn't stop there. The local population get discontent because the safety, security, and standard of living decreases.
Well, they haven't been looking out much for the locals, Greg, it seems. No consideration at all. And the locals know that.
Yes. And, I mean, they're making fun of them now. They're saying, oh, look, these ones who are doing the rioting, that they're not talking about the other side, the immigrants that are doing the rioting. They're focusing on those English, white English, that are doing the rioting. Oh, look, they can't put a sentence. Well, of course, because the first ones in society that are the most vulnerable, the ones who get hit, are the ones with the lowest education. These are the first ones to be fully affected by it. Of course, it doesn't stop there, but it does start there.
Yeah, the rhetoric from the likes of Keir Starmer and his ministers and some of the senior police, tone deaf, or is it part of a strategy? What do you think, the messaging?
Well, Western liberal mainstream politicians are tone deaf. But, of course, this is this is something which is also selective, because he's using the situation. You can see, I mean, why start introducing all of these measures now? I mean, they're making hay while the sun shines, and that hay is at the cost of liberty, freedom, et cetera, of the population. So, I mean, they're doing what any totalitarian state would do. They say, well, we will take some of your liberties in the name of security. And this is what they're doing.
They're not buying it, Greg. I don't think they're going to buy it.
No.
So that's a big problem.
They're trying it.
That's a big problem, isn't it?
Well, I mean, the political elite are in a big problem, because the economy's failing, prices are going up, inflation, unemployment, social, economic, political dislocation, and they're going towards a war with Russia, a war in the Middle East. I mean, Britain of 2024 is not Britain of 1914. Yet they still seem to think that they are. And if you can fit your whole military within one football stadium,
that's
or soccer stadium, and have places left, Generally speaking, this is not going to be like a little cruise into the Black Sea in 1854-56 in Crimea. They're not going to just walk in there, do some stupid things and get away with it. They just don't possess that same capability and capacity they had.
When Starmer gets up and says those things, who does he think he's talking to? Because it seems to me that they feel that there's still some market for them to talk to. But I think you can clearly see on the streets that that might not actually be there anymore.
They've been living in an echo chamber too long. And they live in this echo chamber, which has perfect filter bubbles, and they live in their own little world. So, I mean, this is all the virtue signaling and the affirmation seeking that they're getting from those like-minded globalist liberals who agree. But, I mean, it's definitely going to have no resonance with the average guy on the street. And I think even, well, it's becoming more increasingly unpopular. I mean, without the violence, you can see this discontent in Sweden, which doesn't have all of these riots at the moment.
He could be gone. Mm-hmm. Do you think? What are the chances?
It's very possible.
Yeah. Do you think he knows that?
I think this is why he's trying to bring in these security measures. I mean, basically to bring in a police state. And I mean, there have been a few who have commented on that too. They say, well, yeah, because it's very selective. I don't agree with riots and violence by anyone.
No. Mind you, if no one's listening, Greg, if no one is listening, what do you do?
Well, I mean, it's a bit like Biden in the US is speaking about the world, the international community. I mean, this is just an empty talk because this is something they've been doing for decades. And, I mean, gradually people have tuned out. I mean, Starmer, if we're to put it diplomatically, is not the sharpest knife in the drawer. And I mean, you can see that on him, that he's not up to the task. I mean, like most so-called political leaders in Europe now, just things got beyond their intellectual capability and capacity, not to mention beyond their abilities in general, because these people firstly and foremost, ideologically driven. They're not driven by anything which has a good background of managerial expertise and experience.
Middle East, Greg. Middle East now.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it's kicking off. The US is pretending that it's not supporting Israel, but it is supporting Israel. But I think they're getting worried because, I mean, they have those 4,000 Marines which are going to be off Lebanon soon, and they were already sending them before Netanyahu arrived in Washington. So, I mean, this is telling you that there is a level of covert coordination between
4,000's not enough, is it?
It's not enough for an invasion. Yeah. It's enough for an evacuation.
Okay, yeah.
So this is what their primary mission would be. I mean, if you sent 4,000 there, they'd be dead in no time. This would make Black Hawk Down look a Sunday stroll. Yeah.
But then Iran, the conflict looks imminent. And how tooled up on weapons are they, Greg, Iran?
They are very taught up. I mean, people denounce Iran without actually understanding what the capability and capacity is. I mean, they are very advanced in terms of their engineering and especially even coming into AI. They're among the top international countries in spite of all the sanctions and so forth. And one can see that there's a possibility now they also have been militarily exercising with China and Russia.
Yep. Hasn't Russia come in and said we're behind them? I think they have.
Well, Well, there's been some rumours that there have been quite a few flights between Russia and Iran, military transports recently. Yeah. So, I mean, the United States is reaping what it has sown in Ukraine, doing what it's
if
done.
If Iran was to attack Israel with missiles, I've read that they have multi-warhead missiles that can spew out, you know, multiple warheads.
One rocket with multiple warheads.
And hit them with 8,000 missiles in one go. How do you defend against that?
They don't. Simply, they don't. I mean, Iron Dome was found wanting with the Hezbollah rockets, but also, I mean, they were unable to cope with what Iran sent the first time. Yeah. And these weren't the top-of-the-line missiles. These were the a couple of tiers from the top.
What about nuclear? Do they have nuclear weapons? Someone from there claimed that they do.
It's hard to tell. Of course, the US and Israel have always been saying this as a justification for their aggressive policy against Iran. But I mean, you can't take seriously what these guys are saying because, I mean, Iraq is the first case. I mean, Libya was another. You had a lot of lying and deceit when it comes to threat. I mean, of course, you can say, well, North Korea has, and they're very open about it. Iran is saying they don't. I mean, you've had no actual international confirmation. That's from the IAEA, for example, or these kinds of agencies. So it's an unknown, if you want to be cautious, and you don't need nuclear. I mean, simply put, Israel is a small country, and they've got enough rockets to saturate it.
So what happens to Israel in that situation? How can you protect yourself against that, and how can you fight back?
I would well, they can't protect themselves against it. And, of course, they can try and do a preemptive strike, which would be extremely risky. Because if we look, I mean, you've got Jordan and Egypt, both which are more, at least politically in terms of their politics, are more inclined to support Israel and the US. Although, if you look recently, they both denounced the assassination of Haniyeh in
Tehran.
And these guys are caught in the middle. Of course, if you're Jordan, I mean, you've got a huge population of Palestinians living there. And
big problems.
I mean, it's one. So, I mean, they're caught either way. So, and I mean, if Israel tried to deliver nuclear weapons, of course, I mean, they have to fly a long way. And if you're one of those Gulf states, would you want Israeli warplanes flying over you
nuclear
with
weapons?
Nuclear loads?
No. How do you think this is going to go?
I think Iran will strike. I mean, they have to, politically. There is no other option. I mean, you've got all of these countries saying, oh, don't strike, don't strike. But then, I mean, what lesson does Israel get from this? You can continue to breach international law and violate the sovereignty of others at will, and there's no response. So there is no disincentive for them to stop these international breaches of international law. The United States doesn't stop them, and so it's up to the country that's attacked. So, I mean, this is pretty clear. I mean, it will happen, but in what form? This, what we saw in April, it was a small sample.
You can't do that again with any sort of credibility, can you?
No. They wouldn't do that again because that was a polite warning. So, I mean, it would be much more.
What does the US do if Iran attacks to any sort of scale, do you think?
Well, I mean, the US is in a real pickle, and it's something they've done by their own inaction. I mean, Israel is, well, I mean, it's like a child that has never been told no. And it becomes unruly, and it just does what it wants, when it wants, without any action consequences for its actions. If Iran attacks on a rather large scale, and I would think this would be a tit-for-tat rocketry, which, I mean, it's in favour of Iran, I mean, for a number of reasons, the number of rockets plus the size of the geography of the two. Plus, I think it will also be coordinated likely with Hezbollah, because if we remember, at the same time as Haniyeh, the Israelis bombed Beirut and killed the Hezbollah commander as well. So they've created the situation where they fight a multi-front war. The US doesn't have the manpower to do it. I mean, the US isn't what it used to be at the end of the Cold War. They're a declining empire, and this decline is palpable. Plus, I mean, what are you going to do? You're going to send. They took the carrier task force out of the Persian Gulf for a good reason. This doesn't intimidate. This is a sitting target for anti-ship missiles.
Yeah, because warfare has shifted, hasn't it?
It's shifted massively. I mean, aircraft carriers are probably going to prove in the coming serious conflict, like battleships in the Second World War, obsolete. Yeah.
What about the F-16s now being deployed to Ukraine, a handful? They've got new capabilities. Putin says they'll get shot out of the sky.
Yeah.
I mean, how can that make any difference, really? You'd need thousands of them to do anything. And even then, they're all sitting ducks, right?
This is not an air war. It's a ground war, which is where the main decisive area is in this particular conflict. I mean, six. I mean, it's laughable. And you can. The telling thing is that even the mainstream media, which have been trumping this earlier, they're saying this is what do they say? This Wunderwaffen, this is blah blah blah. But now they don't say anything. This is not going to change anything.
Yeah.
So you can see quite a narrative change. And when Zelensky tried to momentarily make himself relevant by announcing the arrival of F-16s, he was ignored, which is understandable, because they understand. I mean, it's going to make no difference. I mean, Russia has already put the bounties on F-16, so anyone who shoots them.
Well, they're old planes. They've been around for 40 years. Yeah. They're not even new aircraft.
They've been around since, 50-odd years that they've come around. So, I mean, it's stupid to think that that'd be any match. And I mean, you don't hear a peep from Washington either. And I think this is a product of two things. It's a product of the fact that people know that it's going to make zero difference. And Ukraine doesn't really matter anymore. Israel is and always has been more important.
Okay, and finally, our Prime Minister was up at the NATO summit in Washington. And it seems that now, with some of the things our foreign minister has been saying, that we're moving closer to our traditional allies, even though we don't know who's running the US anymore, essentially choosing security and Dubai security, I'll get your opinion on that, over trade with China. Is this a big mistake?
It's an enormous mistake. I mean, if you think New Zealand's economy cannot fall any further, you will soon be proven wrong. You will see what more can be burnt to ash, and this will prove the case. And I mean, the US, if you look in the world, China is one of their obsessions. And this imaginary war with China. I mean, you can see them trying to pressure, for example, Taiwan, South China Sea, and they want New Zealand as an object in this little game. And the thing that all objects, especially ones as small as New Zealand, it's never good for them. I mean, it's expedient for the hegemon. It's deadly for an object like New Zealand. Uh-oh. First of all, you get whacked, economically destroyed because of self-inflicted stupidity. I mean, the US is clear about what it does. I mean, Kissinger said, I mean, it's no secret. To be an enemy of the United States can be dangerous. To be a friend is fatal.
Yeah.
Okay. And this is the case. I mean, you can look throughout history what happens to those who choose this path. They get economically devastated and then they get physically devastated.
Oh, dear. Greg Simons, thanks again. Interesting catch up. And the next few weeks will be what, do you think?
I think things will start ratcheting up because, I mean, the West is, and the US has been poking a stick into Russia, China, Iran for a while. And I think now that these acts of stupidity are going to catch up with them. But it's going to catch up with those vassal and client states of the US first before it reaches the US.
Okay.
And of course, the continuing circus in the US with the run-up to the presidential elections, which is an alternative reality.
Yeah, what does Elon Musk say? The most entertaining outcome is usually the outcome. Well, there is an entertainment angle to that, let me say.
Oh, yes. Satire has become contemporary politics.
Yeah. Thank you, Greg. We'll talk again soon.
All right, cheers, Paul.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.